welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing this time on Wednesday afternoon. Joining me from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, fellas.
And joining us now from Cologne, Germany, he's had planes, trains, and automobiles to get there from Slovenia today, where he's going to be watching the pool play of the European Championships this week. It's Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I made it despite my complete lack of understanding of how to go from a plane to a train with a checked bag, but here we are.
All right. Well, listen, it's not easy. It's not something you do every day in Germany. So remind us real quick before we get into this, who is in the group that you're going to be watching for the next week? Some pretty interesting teams and some NBA stars you're going to be watching.
Yeah, this is by far the toughest group. And so the top four teams advance beyond group play. And usually if you're a favorite, that's no problem. But they call this thing the group of death. You have Slovenia.
With Luka.
France. So Slovenia with Luka and Dragic. France with Gobert and Fournier. Does not have Nick Batum, who was the guy who had the block shot to prevent Slovenia from beating France.
Does not have Victor Wembanyama.
Does not have Victor, which certainly was disappointing to me, among a lot of other people who would have loved to see him on this stage, like Luka was as an 18-year-old when Slovenia won the championship. Anyway, so Slovenia, France, Lithuania, who has two very high-caliber NBA starting big guys in Valanciunas and Sabonis. Germany, who just beat Slovenia pretty soundly in a World Cup qualifying game that was in Munich the other day. Dennis Schroeder, Franz Wagner, not Mo. Mo's banged up, but
Daniel Theis.
Those are the headliners there. They have Bosnia and help me with the pronunciation.
Yusef Nurkic.
Herzegovina.
No.
Bosnia. Bosnia Herzegovina.
Yeah, I got Yusef Nurkic.
I was like, Yusef Nurkic?
Yeah, and by the way, they just beat France in a World Cup qualifying game. So clearly kind of saying, hey, we ain't just showing up to Eurobasket.
That game was in Bosnia, though,
to be cute.
Right?
Okay, but, you know, Nurkic
Well, I'm just
was
saying,
a,
you know, like
beast.
These games, yeah. It's hard to go on the road. It's hard to...
It is. Well, Germany's got home court advantage here. But yeah, my point is, you know, they beat France, a team coming off of a silver medal run in the Olympics. And then Hungary, who I'm going to go ahead and wager that Hungary's not making it out of here.
Well, Hungary qualified for their World Cup last time around. I mean, they're not a slouch. I mean, but it's going to be hard. I agree.
I was hungry when I got here, and I just wolfed down a full pizza.
Wiener schnitzel.
I ordered Wiener schnitzel the other day after I got done hiking the hills around Lake Bled. Which is absolutely stunningly gorgeous, by the way. And so I ordered Wiener schnitzel, and I thought they're going to bring out like a sausage looking type of thing. They brought out something that looked like a damn chicken fried steak, and it was about the size of a hubcap. I also ate all that.
All right. First off, it's not actually a wiener. Secondly, it's
I realized
pork.
That when it came out.
It's
I
breaded
got the turkey
pork.
Version. I got okay. the turkey version. But I ate all that too.
All right.
Oh, wow. Wendy questioning my dietary decisions out here.
Well, it's I'd never heard of turkey schnitzel, but I guess it's can be done.
I also went to Luca's, what's supposedly Luca's favorite restaurant in Ljubljana.
I bet they serve beer.
They do. They serve beer. They also serve ćevapi. Are you familiar with this? It's a meat dish. It's like little kind of, I don't know what you call it, like almost wiener looking things of meat. And then they've got these oven baked beans that are delicious. There's bread that's really good. I usually don't eat red meat, but I figured if I'm going to try to really understand the full Luka experience growing up in Slovenia, I had to make an exception there.
Spectacular. All right. Yeah. Well, we have some action for being the last week of August in the NBA. By the time this comes out, it'll be September. So welcome to September. With the Knicks coming to terms with RJ Barrett. Now, this is an unusual extension for a number of reasons. Obviously, because RJ is in the midst of the trade discussions on Donovan Mitchell and the Knicks, which definitely had picked up over the last week. And they were exchanging offers back and forth. And according to Woj, the Knicks basically set a deadline on Monday. Now, it's an unusual time to come to terms on a rookie extension. Typically, you know, some of the guys will get it done right away in July. And then other times, if a deal isn't done right away or within the first 7 to 10 days, we typically don't see the deals negotiated until September or even into October. And then at the deadline, which is around October 15th, I don't know the exact day this year, October 15th, October 16th, then we see another spate of deals get done. I was talking to an agent of a player who is extension eligible with his team. And they had not even planned to even begin discussions until September. They touched base and agreed they were going to begin discussions. So it's an unusual time to even come to terms. And so this signing, which was for 4 years and 120 million, I believe 107 million is the guarantee, which is actually similar. And I mean, the incentives are not maybe exactly the same, but it's actually kind of almost in the exact same numbers as the Knicks signed Julius Randle to before last season. You know, the guarantee is around $27 million a year and on average. And so before we talk about the quality of the contract, Bontemps, the timing of this signing is tied into these trade talks. And so the thing that I was wondering is the Knicks are under no rush to sign RJ Barrett. They can sign him up until mid-October. By signing him now, basically it's not impossible for him to be traded to Utah, but it's much harder. Why now?
Well, I think the Knicks, you know, to their credit, there you go, McMahon, for people listening to the pod, McMahon just did the Brian, why would they do that? Hand motion.
If it wasn't on YouTube, I'd put two other fingers up towards you.
I mean, look, the Knicks, to their credit, ever since Rudy Gobert got traded, have been operating from a position of strength in these Donovan Mitchell trade talks, where they have looked around, seen the market, seen that nobody can really come anywhere close to what they can offer. And rather than going to the wall and offering everything right away to get Donovan Mitchell on their team, they've looked at it and said, hey, we still got the best offer. And so we're going to hold firm and not offer everything to you guys and leave some stuff in the cupboard when we're done with these discussions. And if you can't find a deal with us, go find one with someone else. And, you know, as Woj reported, you know, clearly the Knicks set this deadline of either we're going to do this deal with RJ Barrett in it, or we're going to sign him this extension. And, you know, Utah called their bluff on it. They signed him this extension. And, you know, and talking to executives for weeks now about this trade, generally when these trades happen, you either have a pick dominated trade where you get a ton of draft picks and a little bit of player equity, or high value player equity and some picks, right? And from the beginning, the Jazz have been saying, we want both, sort of like what the Nets were saying. We want really good players, really good picks for Kevin Durant. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell's a level below that, but they've been asking sort of the same thing for the Knicks. We want all your good young players. We want all your draft picks. If you don't have RJ Barrett in the deal, or you have RJ Barrett on what I think is a pretty good extension now in the deal, now to me, if you're the Knicks, you're saying, all right, if we're going to do some deal with you, we still got other good young players. We've got Quentin Grimes, Emmanuel Quickly, Obi Toppin, and we still have way more draft pick equity than Miami or Cleveland or any other team that's been mentioned can offer. So we've got enough to still do a deal, whether RJ's in it or not, and good luck trying to find a better deal somewhere else. So that's what I think is what's going on here.
And honestly, I was a little surprised that the Jazz were that, and I don't want to say insistent, but that motivated to get RJ Barrett, just because we've talked about it. I wasn't certain that they would want to get somebody who they would have to pay right away. But I agree with you. This can, it certainly changes discussions. You can say complicates discussions, but it's still, you're still getting back to the same conclusion that the Knicks can offer significantly the best offer for Donovan Mitchell. They can put together by far the best package for Donovan Mitchell. Whether it's dominated by picks, you know, they still have some really intriguing young talent, a combination thereof. They can be flexible to salary. You know, if we're talking, you know, we talked last week about potential for a significant trade between the Jazz and the Lakers, and we didn't have the Pat Beverly trade. in mind, although that ended up happening a couple weeks ago, I guess. But, you know, still the Lakers could be involved here as a three-team deal. I mean, there's a lot of ways for this to get done. I think that if you're looking at it, though, all those ways point to Donovan Mitchell being in Madison Square Garden.
Well, you guys, you know how I've been talking about with this stuff over the summer. Judge teams on their actions, not their words. Mm-hmm. So what do the actions here tell us? The actions here tell us that the Knicks didn't really want to trade RJ Barrett. Mm-hmm. And so by signing him, they may have wanted to try to force the Jazz into accepting whatever deal they had on the table. That may have been, but they also just didn't want to trade him. And if they wanted to leave him as an option to be traded, they would have just waited on the, I mean, they obviously negotiated mm-hmm. this contract. It wasn't finalized on Monday morning. It was finalized sometime mm-hmm. before that.
Right. He was only going to be in a trade that the Knicks would make on their terms.
That's right. And so now they're like, okay, well, then he's not going to be in the trade, which tells me the Knicks didn't really want to trade him. And again, it tells me that the Jazz, regardless of what the posturing might be, didn't prioritize getting him. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't want him, but if they had if getting RJ Barrett had been a big priority for the Jazz, then they would have traded for Donovan Mitchell for a package around RJ Barrett. So again, we're going to go back to where we were last week. The Jazz actions have indicated that what they want is New York Knicks unprotected picks.
And picks.
But specifically those unprotected ones. And taking RJ out of it might make it even easier for the Jazz to continue mm-hmm. to focus on that. All right. So as that saga continues to unfold, let's talk about the value of this contract that we see the Knicks got for RJ Barrett. Now, Bontemps, you have talked in the past about while he is something that is very valuable in today's NBA, which is a wing player who can play both ends of the court. He's not elite at either end, although there are times when he demonstrates elite scoring. He is not elite defensively, but does have some positive attributes on defense that we assume will get better. He doesn't shoot at a high percentage. He's not an efficient scorer. So I don't think I don't think he had demonstrated that he was going to be a max level player. Having said that, players like him are in high demand. And should he have not signed with the Knicks and he'd stayed healthy this season, he certainly would have gotten interest on the market next year with so much space. So the Knicks getting him at this number, which, you know how I feel that, you know, you evaluate a contract, you know, if you have to trade that contract, could you trade it? Now, not right now, maybe right now, because he's subject to the poison pill rules that manipulate how much his contract is actually valued in trades. It makes it harder to complete a trade. We won't get into that, but I do think RJ Barrett, from what we know about him, can be traded on this contract. Bontemps. So I sit here. My initial viewpoint of this is RJ Barrett guaranteed himself over $100 million, and the Knicks signed a player that into a contract that to me is a value contract, you know, a year from now when this kicks in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, RJ's not a superstar, but like you laid it out in today's NBA, every team is looking for solid two-way wing players. It's the hardest thing to find in the league. We talked, you know, I remember if it was last week or the week before about the Cavs and the, you know, what's going on in segment. And imagine how much the Cavs would love to have a guy like RJ Barrett at the three. Like, he'd be so much better than any guy they've had come through there over the past few years. Like, it's just really hard to find solid, dependable, healthy two-way wing players. RJ Barrett plays a ton of minutes. He's a solid defender. Obviously, he could be a little more efficient offensively. I'm curious to see what he looks like with a guy like Jalen Brunson on the team, an actual point guard that they could kind of run the offense through instead of him having to have the ball. I think if he's playing in a little bit more of a supporting role where he's getting more catch and shoot opportunities, he's going to shoot a little better. And look, Otto Porter 5 years ago signed a max deal that's essentially the same guaranteed money that RJ signed for right now. And RJ, you know, is not like he could have signed probably $25 million more total if he'd waited till next summer and gotten a 4-year max with where the cap is going. So to get him at a decent rate under the max to get him locked up for the next 4 years. To me, I really like it for the Knicks, and it continues to put them in a position where if they do trade for Donovan Mitchell and they keep him, you've got him, and then you've got Jalen Brunson and RJ Barrett on, with the cap going up, pretty good long-term deals that you can either have as part of your team going forward, or you could potentially flip if you need a clear space to get a star. So I think it's a really good move by them.
And RJ Barrett is 22 years old, you know, still obviously a lot of room for development, a lot of room for growth. I don't think that he's going to ever be a number one type of option on a good team, but I think he can be an extremely good third or fourth offensive option. And you know, if the Knicks are able to pull off the Donovan Mitchell trade, that's what they'll be asking him to do. And if you have a guy who plays both ways, is dependable, can play a lot of minutes, and and can be that third or fourth option, that's not a number.
Well, look at what Andrew Wiggins did for the Warriors this year. And obviously they're both Canadians. They're both from the GTA. So like there's a lot of obvious comparisons there, but like to me, RJ Barrett could down the road easily fill a role like that. If he's on a high level team where he's your third or fourth scorer, he's a solid wing defender. He plays a ton of minutes. He works. He's a really hard worker. Like, you know, I think it's a good contract for the Knicks. I think overall they've had a pretty good summer, especially and they've done a good job of sticking to their guns on what they want to do and not overreacting to the availability of Donovan Mitchell and not panicking and looking at the market and saying we could set a price and nobody else can reach it. So we're just going to be happy to, you know, get in a staring contest with the Jazz and see what happens. I think they've done a good job.
Wendy, you're on mute, brother.
So sorry. The Mitchell Robinson contract.
Technology's hard.
Yes, I know. I don't have my your technical team isn't with you there, and you still were able to figure that out.
Not to interrupt you, but Mitchell Robinson over the next 4 years, $17 million, 15.6, 14.3, 12.9. Another solid contract, descending contract. Like they've done a nice job this summer.
Descending.
Jalen Brunson, you mean?
Jalen Brunson.
Oops. guard that's going to be the next year for him.
Yeah, they did some arbitrage with their draft picks, which they like to do. You know, they ended up yielding out of a lottery pick, but that gave them future first to trade with. And the contract they signed Brunson to is a tradable. Would you think it's a tradable contract? Could I give that a thumbs up?
I believe it is. It's descending. And I think people freaked out about the number. He's going to be middle of the pack among starting point guards in salary. And I think he's going to be at least an above average starting point guard.
People forget that the cap has been flat for 3 or 4 years. The cap is going up. This year it went up $12 million. The TV deal is coming in a couple of years. The cap is going up, and people have not started to factor that in. To McMahon's point, a couple of years, that Jalen Brunson deal is not going to look bad at all. I don't think it looks terrible now. In a couple of years, it's really going to look pretty good.
And I know that Julius Randle had a poor year last year, and if he has another poor year this year, that contract is going to take a – you know, right now it's not in great shape, but I still thought at the time it was a decent value contract. And even though he's not going to have to be an all NBA player to be valuable on that contract. So the eventual potential Donovan Mitchell trade is probably going to largely define the Leon Rose era, or at least this, you know, his time is, you know, in the early years, if it's a long, you know, it's such an important potential transaction. But if you look at, you know, the Knicks have not had tremendous lottery luck, obviously, even the year where RJ, they got and, you know, hit the lottery, so to speak. They got the third pick in the year where Zion and Ja were 1-2.
And they had the worst record in the league.
Right. So they've, you know, there's been, I know it sort of feels like two steps forward, one step back, but
I want to say the Knicks haven't moved up in the draft since they got Patrick Ewing. I think that's the stat.
You know, this transaction is going to be big. And I think that they sort of, one of the things about the Knicks that has happened over and over and over in the last 20 years or 30 years, 20 years that I can say, because that's when I've covered the NBA, is that they just haven't been able to stick to plans. They come up with a plan and then they pull the ripcord on it.
The one time they had a plan, Carmelo became available and James Dolan stepped in and blew up the Donnie Walsh plan and they gave up everything they had to get Carmelo.
Plans. They've had many plans.
I'm just saying that's the one time they spent 2 years saving cap space. They got Amari. They had assets. They were building up slowly. They had that great first half of that 2010-11 season. And then Carmelo became available and then everything got thrown out the window.
But also Amari's knee.
It
was a big risk to sign him. Yeah. All right. We won't
other things happened too, but that was the one time they sort of stuck to a plan and that was for 2 years.
Right. Okay. All right. So that's the most recent chapter in the Knicks, Donovan Mitchell. Who knows how many more there will be. All right. Before we move on, it's trivia time. Trivia time, Tim Bontemps. Yes. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop.
Now it's time for Hoop Collective Trivia.
So to set up our coming segment, the what is going on segment, where we're going to talk about the Kings, everybody's favorite sleeper team to maybe finally break their playoff drought.
No one ever says Mark everybody's Spears favorite
sleeper.
I was being sarcastic. We'll get to that in a minute. I have a couple short questions about playoff droughts. The Kings obviously have the league's longest playoff drought, as we all know. Haven't made the playoffs since 2006. Who's second on that list?
Active
playoff drought, not Sacramento, because that everybody good question. Knows that.
Good question. Okay.
I'm scanning. This. Is it the Charlotte Hornets?
That is correct.
Wow,
dude, I am six, so. I mean, come on,
6 years.
I'm like historically dominant.
Historically dominant.
There are three teams.
We should build a show on McMahon like they did with Schwab years ago.
There are three teams that are currently tied for the longest drought without a playoff series victory.
Well, the Mavericks got off of that list if they were on it, but it had been a while for them without a playoff series victory.
Yep.
So, okay, Charlotte's one of those.
Charlotte's one.
Well, the Knicks haven't in a decade.
The Knicks haven't won in 9 years. They are not in the top five.
Okay.
Okay. Detroit?
Detroit is fourth. 14 years.
Minnesota.
Not one of the three. Minnesota's one of them.
Okay. Because they've only won a playoff series in their life.
That's right.
They've
actually only won two, both in the same year.
That's right. That's right.
Which is the 3 years the year teams are tied.
Orlando.
Charlotte's another one. Orlando's fifth. The other team is pretty obvious.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's the other one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then One final question, because I think it's interesting. Who has the current longest drought without making the conference finals?
Those teams?
None of those teams.
None of those teams.
Two teams have never made it.
Right.
Charlotte's one of them. They have never made it. The Pelicans are the other. They've never made it.
I didn't know if
it was the Pelicans. But there's a team that has not made the playoffs in longer than the Hornets have been in existence. They are the
team. You mean the finals?
The conference finals.
Utah Jazz.
Not the Jazz. Jazz have made the NBA.
That's right. Darren Williams made it.
Yep. 15 years
ago.
Not made the conference finals.
Not made the conference finals.
The Knicks?
Knicks are third, 22 years. Charlotte second.
The Clippers snuck in 2 years ago, right? In the bubble they were in.
The Clippers.
No, they lost.
The Clippers
on the bubble
have not made the conference finals. They made the conference finals in 21. They lost without Kawhi.
That's right. Okay. All right. That was the first time they ever made it. Is that right?
That was the first time they made it. Yep.
Okay.
Is it? No. I was going to say the Bulls, but that's not right.
Not the Bulls.
Hmm.
It's longer than 32 years. So that cuts out a lot of teams right there.
Philadelphia.
No. Last time they made it was 2001.
2001.
All right.
Right geographic area, though.
The Clippers or the Wizards.
The Wizards.
It's like 1979.
43
when they
years.
Won the title.
That's right.
Wow.
I believe so. Yeah, they beat the Spurs in the finals.
Wow.
So there you go. A lot of playoff misery trivia to lead into our segment about the team that's defined by playoff misery, the Sacramento Kings.
Right. Okay, so in our latest team for the what's going on in Sacramento.
Why would they do that? Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
An interesting offseason for the Kings in kind of a positive way. So let's go over
a solid offseason.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go over it a little bit. So first off, they hired Mike Brown as head coach. Mike Brown had been lead assistant with the Warriors for 5 years.
At least five or longer. Six.
Yeah. Well respected. Getting another chance after coaching the Cavs twice and the Lakers once. Then on draft night, they held the key pick, the fourth pick, where there was question about whether they would go with Jaden Ivey, who a lot of people had penciled in as number four on the mock drafts, or they would trade back. And instead, they went with Keegan Murray out of Iowa. Who was still like believed to be right there. That wasn't a reach at all. It was just a matter of whether they were gonna, whether they were gonna draft for need or they were gonna draft, the best player. And from everything I've heard, like regardless of that, they just had Murray higher on their board.
I mean, he was awesome in Vegas for whatever that's worth.
He played in Vegas and in the California Classic. Am I right?
I think so. I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, he shot 40,
and he looked really good in summer leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Well. Yeah, so he averaged 9 3-point attempts a game in summer league. Now he's going to be the featured guy on their roster, at least in the Vegas summer league. That's what those the stats that I have. He shot 40%. So he shot the ball, very well. He also shot the ball really well from the field overall, and was one of the standouts of summer league. Doesn't always mean anything, but it's much better when your guy looks good. Averaged 23 points in 4 Vegas summer league games. And like I said, 50% shooting from the field, 40% from 3. Also rebounded the ball pretty well in 32 minutes, averaged 7 rebounds. So that draft pick, obviously going with a bigger guy there, they're certainly going to watch him. Malik Monk, they signed with their mid-level exception. I thought they got decent value on him. $9 million a year over two. I think they gave him a 2-year deal for $9 million or so a year.
Yep.
Then they, in the the whole thing with them was the decision to trade Tyrese Halliburton for Domantas Sabonis. Sabonis,
they also traded for Kevin Huerter too.
Yes, that's what I was missing. So traded a future first for Kevin Huerter, or did they just absorbed him into space? Right?
What
did
they traded a future pick? I'm looking up the exact terms on.
They
was
did
it a second. Was it maybe a second?
No, it was a future first.
No, it's a first that it's a first that becomes seconds eventually. I'm just looking up the terms while you're talking.
Right.
Lottery protected. Lottery protected in 24, top 12, 25, top 10, and 26 becomes 2 seconds after that.
Okay. So reasonably good value for a quality off the bench scorer, although I guess he possibly could start, but I don't know. But
solid solid wing player, solid yeah. contract.
One wonders why they wouldn't have just traded Bogdan Bogdanović in a sign and trade for Kevin Huerter 2 years ago, but let's move on from that. They've added some talent. The question is, have they added enough talent to break this drought? McMahon, I do think that there is a measure of excitement in Sacramento that this could be it. This could be the time for the Kings to step forward. What do you think about where they are after this offseason?
Did you see that picture of the jubilant Kings fans coming out of a California Classic win? And the guy said, "We're going to win 40 this year, baby."
It was not said in irony either. It was not said in irony.
Oh, they have not won 40. They are better than they've been. And I think we are giving some pretty faint praise. This team's. And I'm scrolling on Basketball Reference. 2005-06.
So the last time they made the playoffs is the last time they were over 500?
Last time they were over 500. We've said our piece on the Halliburton deal. Look, Sabonis is a really good player, and we'll see if he signs an extension with them. But if that's a rental, that's a mess. And if they're not winning, I think they're in danger of it being a rental. One thing I'm very curious to see is what ends up happening with Harrison Barnes. He's on about an $18 million expiring contract. I do think he's a sort of he's a lockdown. He's a decent defender, a pretty good offensive player. I do think great locker room guy. I think he's a guy who would be attractive to teams that are contenders potentially. I'm curious to see if they can flip him in to something else, or if they tried. He was in a lot of trade rumors last year. If they try to flip him in to something else, I think right now though, what they have is a core that can be competitive, but it's not a top eight team in the Western Conference. No matter how much Mark Spears crows about it.
Well, he's not the only one. Our guy Chris Mannix was saying they're going to make the playoffs the other day. There's been this weird push for them to make the playoffs. We're just going to play a game and just go through and list how many teams we think are better than the Kings, or the Kings are better than. Okay. Is Phoenix better than the Kings? Would say yes. Is Memphis yes. better? Yes. Yes. Golden State. Yes. Dallas. Denver. Yes. Minnesota. Yes. The Pelicans. Yes. The Clippers. Yes. The Lakers. Yes. The Blazers.
Yes.
Well, they would argue about maybe the late. They would argue they could probably.
I'll leave the Blazers as a maybe.
So we got to eight teams that are 100% better. And I
don't know if the Lakers, as currently constructed, are guaranteed better than them.
The Lakers and the Blazers are ninth and 10th on our list. And we think they're better, but they could maybe have some flaws. I personally think. Right. If the Blazers are healthy, they're clearly a better team.
Let me ask you this. If the Kings make the play-in tournament but get bounced, will there be a banner in that beautiful new arena that I've never been to?
I don't know if there'll be a banner, but that
there won't be a banner, but it would be a great year.
It would be celebrated.
Why not a banner? Sure. I think there should be a banner.
There might be. I mean, look, I feel Kings fans are great. I feel really bad for the run of stretch. I was looking through that franchise index when you're looking at it, their wins. In this 16-year playoff drought, they've won less than 30 games 8 times. Like half the years they missed the playoffs, they've been one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, it's just been a miserable experience. So one time they get the high pick, they draft Marvin Bagley, They don't draft, you know, they miss out on Luka. They miss out on Trae Young. They miss out on Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, it's just been a rough stretch for them. But
they miss out on trading down, which they easily could have done.
Right. They could have done that too. But, you know, Keegan Murray is interesting. We'll see if Mike Brown can get them to defend. The last 2 years have been the bottom five in defense. They've generally been one of the worst defensive teams in the league.
It's more than the last 2 years.
Well, right. But Mike Brown should help them be better in that area. My problem is just looking at their team. Like, I just they are going to be a okay regular season team. The West is just really tough. And again, on a night to night basis, like, you know, they just don't really have anybody to guard these good players on the other team. They have no real interior presence. If you're playing Domantas Sabonis at center, like, your defense is probably going to stink. We'll see what happens with Rashawn Holmes. Things ended pretty rough last year with him. Maybe that'll get better this year. And he'll be part of the rotation again. But like, I just think it's going to be a struggle for them, even with Mike Brown, hopefully giving them some more defensive structure, to really be able to guard well enough to compete with these teams in the West to be better. Like, to me, if you go down Portland's roster, like Dame, Yusuf Nurkic, Jeremy Grant, you know, if Nasir Little, he looked really good last year before he got hurt, he could take a step forward this year. Like, I think they're going
to,
they have Anthony Simons. They signed Gary Payton. He'll be able to help them defensively. Like, I think Portland's clearly better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So like, we're talking like their best case scenario. Like, now Sacramento might be in a bit of a gap where like the teams below them in the West are really going to be bad. Like Oklahoma, Houston, San Antonio. I can't think who the other team is. Somebody else that's
Utah.
And Utah. They're going to stink too, almost certainly.
Utah.
So Sacramento's probably in a bit of a gap by themselves in 11th. But if they're in a gap by themselves in 11th, they're still not in the play-in tournament. So,
well, some of those teams in front of them could have injuries.
It's worst case scenario. Yeah.
But look, I will say this.
Right.
Herter and Monk.
I think they're a late lottery team again next year. Or a late, you know, is that progress? I don't know. I don't know if you can say that.
Herter and Monk are two guys that they got at no cost in terms of their roster. Both of those guys are guys who can upgrade their depth. Yeah. For sure. And they're going to have games where they're going to score 30 points or 25 points and make a big difference.
Last year, the Kings were 24th in offense and they were 27th in defense. For this team to have a chance to be good, that offense has got to be top half, right? That's got to be their path to being a solid team, is like between De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis and Monk and Keegan Murray and Herter, that they just score a lot of points. Like, if they can do that, they could finish somewhere between 10th and 15th in offense.
It would also help if De'Aaron Fox was healthy. He hasn't been healthy the last couple of years. I mean, he's missed 20 plus games.
It's a big prove it year for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's the expectations for him are weighing down on him, and we'll see what happens there. The interesting thing about Sabonis, so he has 1 year left on his contract, or 2 years, this year and next. He is extension eligible, but he's one of these guys who's in this donut hole, like Jaylen Brown is in. We talked about that in the past, like DeJounte Murray was in, where he's, as a multi-time all-star and one of the best players on this team, he, especially with the cap going up, as Bontemps referenced, he is probably worth more on the open market than he can extend for.
The difference is they can renegotiate and extend him next summer, in theory,
using cap space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas, he's eligible, like, Celtics have done.
But he's eligible to sign an extension now, but it would probably be surprising if he does sign it. So how he performs this year and how he fits is something to monitor.
Are we sure that he would get more than, like, because he would be eligible to sign for something?
You've been down on him, like, you not down on him, but you've never been a big believer in him. I think he's a great player. I agree. He's not a number one.
I just think I think he is sort of an old archetype of an NBA player, right? As like a really, an awesome offensive power forward who's a minus on defense, right? Like, that archetype of player has just sort of it's become sort of a archaic thing in today's NBA where you don't, it's hard to win with that kind of player. You have to have very specific pieces around him, like a Miles Turner, right? Like in Indiana, that was sort of the optimal situation. You have an athletic center who can make up for his shortcomings on defense, who can also space the floor on offense so he can operate inside. There just are not a lot of those guys, and he was probably in the best situation he was in. So what I was going to ask was, like, John Collins signed for around $25 million a year. Domantas Sabonis could extend for around $25 million a year. Are we sure?
I think it's like 24.
Somewhere in that ballpark. Are we sure he's got a higher market than that?
I'm not, because I agree with you. I think it's a tough fit to have him be a centerpiece player if you are trying to be a good team.
You know, he's like, 26 years old, a two-time All-Star, high efficiency.
Yeah,
never won a playoff series. He's an outstanding offensive player.
It's kind of his fault.
It's difficult to build around him.
Yeah, it's kind of his fault because of the player he is. Like Nikola Vucevic is a similar type of player. He extended a couple years ago for 4 for $100, roughly, with the Magic. Like, I think that's kind of what Sabonis's market is. Like, I think it's more real. Like, I'm not saying he will extend, because I think they're in a situation where, to your point, Brian, like, Sacramento traded Tyrese Haliburton for him. They have a desire to keep him. They have the potential to have some cap space next summer. They could renegotiate him up, give him more money. But I just think if you get him to the open market, is there going to be a rush of teams trying to pay him $35 million a year? I don't know.
I don't see it. I don't think he can be the best player on a good team.
I agree with that. That's not in question. But I mean, look, he's been poo-pooed a lot because he got traded for Haliburton. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very accomplished player. I watched him a lot when he was in Indiana. He's been a central part of a lot of victories. I agree. He's not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you know, he was voted as an All-Star twice by the coaches for a reason.
And yeah. Listen, he's a good player
in the Eastern Conference, when the Eastern Conference stunk.
I mean, watching
that keeps getting qualified. I
watching him play. He's a fun player to watch. He's a very talented offensive player. Again, that's a different thing than what is his market value.
All right. Well, we're going to hear from, McMahon after he watches him play for Lithuania when he is the best player on the team for the next week. So prepare that scouting report.
Don't you talk bad about Valanciunas. Listen, wait till you see those Lithuanian fans.
The Lithuanian fans are amazing.
I'm jealous, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, wait till you see those Lithuanian fans. They bring, I don't know if they'll be allowed to bring the drums, but when I've been to games, they bring the drums. So I don't know if that's illegal or not.
Oh, the Slovenians bring the drums too.
Is that right?
Zoos, all kinds of good stuff.
Okay. Well, Lithuanian fans are historically well known for their for their support. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. All right, before we go, Bontemps's output in August has been, you know, admirable. I just got off of a 4-day golf trip. Bontemps is continuing to publish stories.
Some of us work, some of us don't.
He is going to get the award, the coveted August star for NBA.com.
He's the August MVP.
He's like
the MVP of the pro-ams.
It's going to be like Sabonis in Cologne this week. He's going to be the September MVP. Okay.
Ooh, when are you making a prediction?
Yeah, that's right. I think probably Luka. I might lean towards Luka, especially with what the team needs from him to win. Okay. So, Bontemps, you had a story. You've done this before. Set this up for us before we talk about what this showed.
Yeah, so every offseason, I poll a bunch of coaches, scouts, and executives and sort of get a temperature check on where the league stands on a variety of subjects, from who's the best player in the league to who's going to be the MVP to who the best player in a few years is going to be, who the best rookie in a few years in this year's class is going to be, to best or worst offseason, who's going to win the title, that kind of stuff. So just try to get a general temperature check of where people in the league think stand a few weeks before the start of the season.
Right. Okay. So you talked to more than a dozen executives.
Yeah. I got 15 coaches, scouts, and executives to ask them stuff.
All right. So, I think the two questions you have right off the bat are two of the most interesting questions. Who is the best player in the NBA right now? Last year, do you remember who got this last year?
Durant and Giannis split. I did 10 votes last year or 10 people last year. Durant and Giannis split 5 votes each. This year, Giannis got 11, Steph got 3, and LeBron got 1.
The big news there is 5 more people are willing to take Bontemps' calls.
There's a lot more time this summer than last summer when we had like 2 weeks between seasons again.
That's true. Backlash on Durant not making it in here.
Struggled in the playoffs. Yeah. Well, durability matters, and he also got completely outplayed in the playoffs by Jason Tatum. So
Giannis, meanwhile, was just spectacular in the playoffs, and then Curry also with the finals MVP. Luka, no votes.
Yeah, that actually was interesting to me, but you know what? Those guys are proven championship players and Luka and the NBA has not gotten to that point yet.
There's 8 MVPs here. Giannis has 2, Curry has 2, LeBron has 4. So
yeah. And if the Warriors hadn't had the run they did to the finals and won the way they did and the way Steph played, I think Giannis probably would have had either unanimous votes or awfully close to it. You know, LeBron probably still gets 1. But like Giannis is pretty universally at this point, I think, considered the best player.
Well, and you could say, okay, no Luka, but hey, Jokic, he's the guy who's been MVP the last couple of years. What about Joel Embiid, the guy that Daryl Morey is bad-mouthing folks who didn't vote for the last 2 years? So, I mean, there's some, you know, there's a few.
Well, a lot of good players.
Or at least
be careful about what Daryl says about his own players. That, you know.
Point being, you know, certainly if you look at the MVP voting the last 2 years, those two guys, have been 1-2, and they didn't get any votes. So that's interesting.
That's true. And we'll talk about Jokic again here in a second. Who's the best player in the NBA in 5 years from now? Giannis edges Luka 7-6 with Tatum getting 2 votes.
Again, I thought it was fascinating. Tatum got a couple votes and a couple other people brought him up. Tatum obviously had a great year. I didn't quite expect him to get that much support for that award or that question. And I thought it was interesting that Giannis ended up with more votes than Luka. I thought Luka was going to get basically every vote. And I don't think it's a criticism of Luka that he didn't, but like,
there's some evidence, at least amongst this sample, that this sample isn't the biggest Luka fans.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, everybody brought him up in some form. To me, I think it's more of a statement of where Giannis stands among people, that they think he's still going to be that good in 5 years. And I also think, you know, the biggest thing that came up was a lot of people wanted to pick Luka and ultimately didn't because of his deficiencies on defense. And I think that's sort of the thing that I'm curious to watch over the next year or two is, does he sort of go in the James Harden direction of being sort of an all one way player that's, you know, just trying not to be a complete liability on defense? Or can he get his defense a little bit north of that to being a, you know, not awesome defender, but something more closer to Steph where he's decent than just not awful.
So I don't think what you just said was fair about James Harden, honestly, because I think when the Rockets were the best, I think, and their scheme was totally built to protect Harden and kind of enhance what he did well, specifically with his switching, because he was an absolute elite post defender. He right. was, you know, active hands, those kind of things. There was a point where Harden was not a minus defensive player.
All right. You guys know that I'm a big, big believer in Jason Tatum. I believe he is finals MVP caliber player. Could have been this year finals MVP. He didn't get it done clearly in the finals. He didn't play his best. The Celtics mm-hmm. didn't play their best. Watching how Tatum reacts to that first major setback is, I mean, I'm not saying this is a make or break season for him at all, to be right. clear, but like, you know, we're going to learn a lot about what Tatum's ceiling is going to be and how he reacts to it this year. I mean, I'm not saying that I would have voted for, I probably would vote for Doncic here. Although I'm not debating Giannis because, you know, but if you're asking me, you know, Doncic's skill level is just so incredible that I just think it's going to be hard to deal with
him. And you're talking about 32 versus 28. Now,
right.
you know, it is fair to say, hey, Giannis at 32, I trust what his positioning levels. I trust that he's not going to break down because he is a, you know, so in such great shape and just such a physical specimen. And it's absolutely 100% fair to say, hey, I don't know if Luke is going to continue to get better because I don't know if it's going to be an annual thing where he has to play his way into shape. Now, playing Eurobasket until a week and a half before training camp certainly is a positive thing for conditioning.
Yeah.
So but my point is just Tatum is on people's minds here is, mm-hmm. I think, is another reminder to watch Tatum this year. I think how Tatum approaches this year is so important.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's got a pretty good chance to be the MVP of the league this year. I think they got a chance to win a million regulars. Well,
very good.
We'll get to
that up because
we'll get to that in a second. But I just want to reinforce something that I said before, and that the thing, like every single person who I talked to for that question brought Luka up, but
yeah.
it was the two way ability of Giannis and Tatum that ultimately was in, you know, other factors overall, but it was the defensive component that had people pick them. And I do think Stephen Harden is sort of, to me, the question to look at with Luka. And that, like, you're right, McMahon, James, they did a good job of sort of finding ways to maximize what James is good at, but they had to build their entire system to make up for what he wouldn't do and what he couldn't do on defense. And Steph just became
will build their whole system to put Luka in positions to where his slow feet aren't just easily exploited.
No, I get that.
Lateral quickness defensively, at least.
Yeah, I get that. I guess my point is the Warriors didn't really have to do that with Steph. Like, I'm not saying Steph's not Gary Payton. I'm not trying to make him out to be the greatest defender of all time, but he became decent. And like, if Luka can go that way and like just get to decent and not have to be like covered up for like that in the way that the Rockets had to do for Harden, I think that's sort of the kind of difference we're talking about. Because James Harden at his peak is one of the best offensive players I've ever seen in the league.
So, all right, who will be the MVP this season? Giannis Antetokounmpo wins again. Boy, this group loves Giannis. Hmm. Who could blame them? Luka, yeah, right. Giannis gets 5 votes, Luka 4, Embiid 4. You guys know how I feel about Embiid. Curry 1 and Ja 1. More interestingly, Jokic, no vote.
And every single person said Jokic ain't winning 3 in a row, which I agree with. They would have to win 70 down this games.
Road. I've been down this road, you know, like with Giannis. You know, it wasn't like Giannis had a trash year last year.
Yeah.
The standard after you've won 2 in a row, why is it is the higher standard for 3 as opposed to 2? I don't know. LeBron won 2 in a row twice. And, you know, very simply, he changed teams the 1 year, and that could have been the reason why he didn't win, although Derrick Rose had a great year. But
it hasn't happened since Larry Bird in the mid-80s. Right.
Also, fair or not, the fact that Joker's won 2 in a row and he's not been to the finals, I think that people are just going to have a very hard time voting for him for a third straight year. and say it shouldn't be that way, but I think that's just the reality of the situation.
Well, to me, I talked about watching Tatum this year as being one of the things. I think the Philly 76ers are going to be a fascinating team to watch. I'm watching what Harden is able to do, where he appears to rededicate himself, watching how good Tyrese Maxey is able to do in the third year potential leap zone that we see so many players, whether he can take another leap or not. You know, they've added that team. They're a team that I'm very interested to see how they do. A lot, you know, there's a bunch of teams who fit that bill, but they're a team I'm very interested in seeing. And so you guys know that I've been a big believer in Joel the last 2 years, but
well, Philly and Boston are set up to win a ton of regular season games. And if they finish there, I think they're both going to probably finish top three in the East. And I think Boston's got a chance to win 60 plus games. You win 60 plus games, you got a really good chance to win MVP. So, you know, I think those are probably the two best bets for me on the board to win are him and Embiid, because they are, if they're healthy, their team should be really good and they're going to have a lot of support.
I think Luka's going to have a really good chance. I think if the Mavericks are, and this is a big if, but if they're a top four team in the West after losing Brunson, then I think Luka's going to have a...
he will win MVP if that happens.
Yeah, when Luka came back from his little recovered from his sprained ankle and lose some weight sabbatical last year. So from January 1st on, he came back and he played in 44 games. The Mavericks are 32-12 in those games. If they have that type of record, you know, extended over an 82-point game, and he's, you know, he'll put up the counting numbers, I think he'll have a good chance.
He'll have a very good shot if they're top four, especially because everybody's been down on him this summer, losing Brunson. He's got a chance to have a big narrative push if he if he has them playing like that.
There's a number of other questions that you had asked, but before we go, I just want to go over two pretty quick. Which team had the best offseason? You should check this out, by the way. There's Montem says a lot more in here. Which team had the best offseason in the whole league? The Celtics, who did the Malcolm Brogdon trade and signed Danilo Gallinari, who unfortunately just suffered a knee injury in the World Cup qualifier. Looks like it's not severe, but
you know, Gallinari, not as bad as it initially seemed it was going to be, that's for sure.
And, you know, Gallinari is injury prone, and so when you sign him, you probably know you have to deal with an injury. But Celtics get 6 votes. The Utah Jazz got 2 votes because of that Gobert trade, and they haven't even done a Mitchell trade yet. It was a great trade, although I would just say it's a lot easier to trade stars than acquire them. Credit the Jazz, but the hard part is replacing the star. But Bontemps, the Celtics really being a heavy pick here amongst this sampling. I'm not so sure it was so cut and dry, but I certainly understand they didn't give up any rotation players to get Brogdon.
That question sort of fell the way it did because everybody sort of shrugged and said the Celtics. It was kind of a weird summer in that there wasn't a lot of huge movement. There weren't a ton of big free agents available. Most of them re-signed with their teams. Obviously Jalen Brunson went to the Knicks, but there wasn't some kind of earth-shattering move other than the Gobert move. And that one had a lot of people on both sides of it. Whereas the Celtics, to your point, got Gallo and Malcolm Brogdon without giving up any of their top 8 players.
Yeah. The Hawks made a big move to DeJounte Murray, but I think that one, similar to Gobert, you know, they didn't give up as much, but there was, an awful lot.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if you say all in, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close to say that was an all in move.
Yeah.
All right. Which team had the worst off season? Mm-hmm. Now, Dallas Mavericks had the 6 votes. We've talked about the Mavs on here. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the team that finished with this second here, Charlotte Hornets. And the reason that they are voted here is not really their actions, but because, you know, arguably their second best player, Miles Bridges, was arrested and charged with felonies. And it's not something it's, you know, we have to let the legal process play out, obviously, but it's extraordinarily concerning. And this is a guy who, I don't know whether he would have gotten a max contract or not, but certainly he would have gotten close to it. They, you know, the Hornets were prepared to make a major investment in him. And now his future as an NBA player is murky. And, you know, the Hornets have taken a step back. because of it. It's
well, and they also had a head coach hiring where the guy that they hire said, you know what, on second thought, I'm cool being an assistant on the Warriors.
He took one look at their process and asked out. And that was before the unfortunate events with Bridges.
And Bridges, listen,
although they ended up with a good coach, in my opinion. Steve Clifford is a good coach for this group.
Right. But. Right. But what Bridges is accused of, and certainly, you know, the evidence that has been out there publicly is just, I don't know if this guy's playing ever again in the NBA.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think we can all just say it's what's going to happen. It's just very unfortunate, but it's something that had a significant impact in the NBA that, you know, it's not being discussed because it's so upsetting and we're unsure, but it's a big reality for the league.
The simple fact is he cannot be in the Hornets plans, certainly immediately. Well,
I don't want to go any farther than just saying, you know, this is just, it's a very upsetting topic. And so, but it's noted by these executives on it being one of the big significant things that happened this summer, because
Tim's point also looked at them firing James Borrego after they basically improved every year under his tenure the past few years. And we're like, what direction is this team going in on top of that? It's like, what are these guys trying to do? And then as Tim also correctly mentioned, you know, yes, they ended up with Steve Clifford, who is a good coach, but it's only after the guy they chose to be their coach bailed after a few days because he didn't like what was going on there. So, I mean, it especially since they have a very good young player to build around in LaMelo Ball, none of that other stuff is good either.
A couple of people said the Nets had the worst off season. Did they?
I mean, listen, I think the Nets kind of said they're to take back control of the franchise and succeed.
Maybe. I mean,
now it's for temporarily at least.
I don't know.
You can argue whether it was actually bad. I can also completely understand why they got votes. And I was honestly surprised they didn't get more votes for just what a complete dumpster fire it's been, regardless of what the actual results are.
True. Well, good work on this, Bontemps. I know it took you a few weeks to put this together.
You didn't want to track if real quick at the end, I think it's at least worth mentioning the who's going to win the conferences and finals at the end.
So in the East, this is not a surprise. The Bucks, so these guys like the Bucks. They like Giannis. Bucks and Celtics tied, both with 7. Not a single vote. Miami got 1 vote. Not a single vote for the Nets or 76ers.
Last year the Nets and Lakers had the most votes by a significant amount, and neither one of them won a playoff series. So it's a reminder that this isn't always.
One of them
won
a playoff game.
True. True.
So I hope you scrapped the 10 you talked to last year then and got 15 fresh.
It's just a reminder that, things look a certain way now. Like, nobody thought the Celtics and, you know, a couple people thought the Warriors might be there, but like Celtics Warriors wasn't exactly a hot pick 2 years ago. And Phoenix Bucks wasn't exactly, the Suns weren't seen as that kind of team a couple of years ago either. So, we've been in a kind of an interesting spot the last couple of years where teams have sort of come out of nowhere to make these kinds of runs, which we're not used to in the NBA.
And then the West, the Clippers, 8 votes, just 3 for the Warriors, defending Warriors, and 3 for the Suns.
Kings.
I'm still scrolling. Obviously the Clippers ceiling is high. The ceiling has been high for 3-4 years now, whatever. Yeah, sure. I know the Warriors, they had some things go their way, but, they were great from start to finish last year. And when it mattered, they were excellent when it mattered.
I would say they were great at the start and the finish. There was some tough going in the middle.
Yeah. When it mattered, they were great. But the Clippers heavy favorites, also the Clippers favored amongst the voters to win the championship too, over the Bucks. Bucks and Celtics both tied for second.
Yeah.
Big belief in the Clippers here.
Look, they've sort of been the boogeyman hanging over the West for a couple of years now, ever since Kawhi got hurt, but they've just spent the last couple of years amassing all this depth, getting Batum, getting Robert Covington, getting Norman Powell. They could play virtually every way. Yep. Get John Wall this summer for free, basically. You know, they've got a great coach who's won a championship in Ty Lue. They can play every style. They've got tons of versatile depth. They've got two elite wing players. It just comes down to, are Paul George and Kawhi Leonard going to be on the court? I don't know. Like, well, if they're on the court, they're the favorites, but are they on the court? I don't know.
They're headed for a $300+ million payroll. They're not in the repeater tax yet. Are they in the repeater tax?
I mean, Ballmer's so rich. Who gives a crap what they're...
I'm pretty sure they would be this year because they would have signed Kawhi with cap space in 2019. So in theory, they wouldn't have been in the tax that summer. So then the next 3 years, this would be the third year in a row.
I bet you he has a yacht more expensive than their payroll will be. So
as I always say, Steve Ballmer actually... depending on what happens with the micro, he's the largest individual stockholder for Microsoft. So depending on what kind of day the Microsoft stock has, his net worth varies by the day on the value of whole NBA teams. And he makes over $700 million a year just in forget about any other dividends, just in Microsoft stock dividends. Jeez. He makes $700 million.
That gives him enough cash to just pay for anything he wants to do with the Clippers by itself before you look at anything.
So I have gotten heat before for pointing out that the Warriors outspend everybody. The Clippers are in the same boat. They are attempting to outspend everybody. And let me just say this about the Clippers. One of the reasons why their upward mobility is interesting. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George make over $40 million, make $43 million a year. But Norm Powell, Marcus Morris, Luke Kennard, Robert Covington, Reggie Jackson, Nick Batum, Vitzia Zubac all make between $10 and $16 million. All of those players, a lot of them on, you know, Morris only has 2 years left. Covington has 2 years. They signed an extension, very tradable. Batum,
very tradable contracts.
Zubac, very tradable contract. Even Terrence Mann, who signed an extension that kicks in next year. So he'd be poison pill this year, but they signed him for 2 years and like $22 million. Yep. All of these contracts are beautifully packageable and tradable. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't care whether he's, you know, like Joe Lacob recently told The Athletic, he goes, we can't have a $400 or $500 million payroll. Guess who can't have a $400 or $500
million? Yeah, Ballmer says we can.
Ballmer can, especially if they don't change any rules in the short term with the luxury tax. So
that's the other part of this that's been sort of the looming boogeyman over the league is that there's been all this talk about what's going to happen with the Warriors spending this money, you know, teams spending money. And to your point, Brian, the Clippers have been sitting there just amassing this war chest of players. You know, last year they didn't make the playoffs. They had no chance to really make any kind of run because Kawhi was likely never going to come back. They still took on all this money to get Robert Covington and Norman Powell during the season. Yeah. It wasn't like we're going to try to retrench. It was like, no, we're going to add to next year when we got a chance to win a title. So
yeah, this didn't make headlines because the Clippers weren't in the private, you know, weren't in the, but you know, the Warriors having so much money and being able to acquire Andrew Wiggins, which, you know, was just like, oh my God, how can we, you know, it's out of our ballpark at the trade deadline. When they traded for Powell and Covington, I was talking to an owner the next day. He is a very wealthy man. He is a multi-billionaire. He was throwing his arms up going, oh my God, like not all billionaires are the same. You know, like he's like, I can't believe what they're willing to do. And so, you know, certainly that's not going to be it's not the reason why the Warriors won the title, but certainly being able to have a fourth or fifth man like Wiggins was a huge, you know, was a significant factor in the Warriors' depth and being able to do it. Having the ability on this team to sign all these contracts to set them up and give them depth, you know, they're going to win it because of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard if they're going to win it. But having all that depth is a big factor too. So,
by the way, that's how Bon Temps and I feel when we let you pick a restaurant. We're like, oh, we can't afford that place.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah, you know me and my highfalutin tastes. All right. I'm sorry. We're holding McMahon from the beer garden there and his steins there, Bon Temps. We have to let him go.
Actually, from Goldsberry's.
Goldsberry's.
Not Stein. Yeah, Kurt Goldsberry.
That's an inside joke. All right. Thank you, Bon Temps. Thank you, McMahon. Enjoy your time in Germany. Thanks to all our producers, Jackson, Bruce, and Andrea. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
Avita Jane.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.